So what would Gandhi do if he was here and facing Donald Trump as president of the United States of America? That's actually an interesting question. And I have on the telephone with me right now, all the way from London, Charles Cassidy. He teaches mathematics, but he also is behind a group called Evidence-Based Wisdom. And the website is evidencebasedwisdom.com. Charles, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ethan. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
Well, I'm really glad we were able to get you. This is a fascinating topic and an excellent article in Psychology Today as well. But Charles, do me a favor. Let's start with give me a summary really quick, though, of what is evidence-based wisdom? What does that mean?
Well, it's a great question. My background's physics, actually. So, for me, if something can't be measured, I tend to sort of lose interest quite quickly. I kind of thought of wisdom typically as a sort of late night coffee student kind of conversation. You know, maybe it's theology, maybe it's philosophy, but that's kind of changed in the last sort of 10 years. It's become a real serious subject of scientific inquiry. So for me, with my science background, the idea that this sort of glittering prize of, you know, that's been sought over generations is something that science is getting its handle on. That got me really excited. So that's why I'm really excited about this area at the moment.
Oh, it's great. So, well, all right. So then, of course, my next question is, how do you measure wisdom? I mean, that seems like such an esoteric topic. How do we measure it?
Yeah, I mean, it's another great question. I mean, firstly, we've got to define it. And wisdom isn't something like gravity, you know, that you can sort of objectively say it exists outside humans, right? So it's a construct we've made up ourselves. So there's quite a bit of variance over what people, you know, say is the definition of wisdom. But kind of a nice way to think about it is it's people who are able to integrate intelligence with emotion. They can consider problems from multiple perspectives, you know, navigate uncertainty skillfully. And what's really important is that they do this with a mind towards orientating to the common good. It's not just about advancing your own interests. I mean, that's Machiavellian, that's tactical perhaps, but no one would say doing that for just simply to advance your own interests was wise.
Oh, there you go. I appreciate you explaining that to me. And so,
yeah.
So you're a director of evidence-based wisdom, and you're sitting in the back of a taxi at 3:30 a.m., which I'm not going to ask you why. I'll leave that question alone, what you're doing at 3:30 a.m. But that's a separate conversation that we can have. But what would Gandhi do? And I thought that was what a brilliant question, because, you know, we can all talk about President Trump and strategies and everything else, but what a fascinating thought. So what's your take on what Gandhi would do?
Well, firstly, I mean, let's keep in mind the time change. So I was in the back of a taxi coming home from an election party, which had,
taking place
later here than over there. So the party had kind of taken a bit of a, you know, a sharp, nasty downturn and wasn't kind of turning out the way I'd hoped. And so I'm sort of flailing around trying to work out how do we respond to this. You know, I think like a lot of your listeners, you know, how does one actually deal with this? You know, do we have the tools to put together a meaningful response? And, you know, doing this work that I do with wisdom, Gandhi comes up a lot. He's often cited in polls and surveys as, you know, one of the wisest leaders of the 20th century. So this kind of image hit me of, you know, Gandhi meeting Trump, you know, the worlds apart, you know, how would that play out? So that's how the idea came to be in the first place.
Oh, okay. All right. And I appreciate that, by the way. I love learning about Gandhi. And you're right. I think many people consider him not just one of the wisest, but one of the key things whenever I talk about, you know, protesting here in the United States, our First Amendment right to protest, I always try and relate back to the idea of peaceful protests. And he's one of those key leaders, he and the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Sure.
So, all right. Sure. So how do we apply now? All right. So what, you know, Gandhi, what would he do? I mean, would he do a big sit-in?
What would he do? That's the question.
Block
you've
him,
asked
right?
it a couple of ways, and it's about time I actually kind of faced it head on. I mean, we can't know exactly what he'd do, but from this research that's emerging about what wise people do, now they have scores, they have kind of wisdom scales, essentially, so they can ask people, imagine you were given this situation, what would you do? And then a bunch of psychologists can kind of grade their response, you know, give them a wisdom score, which I know sounds a little bit odd, but, you know, it's kind of standing up to empirical testing and turning out to be, you know, quite replicatable. They're able to identify how wise people generally respond to dilemmas. So we can see what is it that wise people do. And there's a couple of really interesting things that come out of this research that, you know, could suggest how perhaps someone like Gandhi might respond. And the first one I think that's really key, especially with all this sort of, you know, just angst and conflict that's going on at the moment, is wise people are really good at considering a problem from multiple perspectives simultaneously.
Okay, Charles, I have to stop you right there. So hang on just a second. Charles Cassidy is joining me on the phone from London. He's the director of evidence-based wisdom. So I stopped you right there, Charles, because in our current political environment, particularly here in the United States, I can't speak as well to what's happening in the UK right now, but I can't think of a single political leader who actually seeks out other perspectives. Now, President Trump keeps inviting people into the White House who disagree with him, but I'm not getting the feeling that he's actually listening. You know what I mean? So it's one thing to say, hey, come on in, let's talk about this. But it's another thing to fundamentally, deeply listen and consider the other arguments.
Yeah, for sure. And also, you know, some people, when they say, hey, you know, they read my article and say, I'm not going to sit down with these guys with these, you know, detestable perspectives and engage with them. It's not really for their own good. It's for our own good. You know, if we want to get a broad understanding of this situation, we need to get to the people that have a perspective on it that we can't possibly see from where we're standing. You know, each of us is trapped in our own, you know, we can only see things from one place, right? So if you really want to understand what's going on, our adversaries have to be viewed as, you know, assets to be tapped. You know, so that's why we need to go out and find these people that are seeing things differently. It doesn't necessarily mean we're going to compromise or we're going to, you know, do what they say. But, you know, and I, some people get nervous about that. You know, I'm not going to sit down with these people. But it's a selfish thing. You know, if you want to understand what's going on, you can't really do so unless you're prepared to, you know, tap the perspective of your adversary. So that's kind of what I'm getting at with that.
In other words, so like you said, I want to just re-summarize what you just said. You listen and consider. That doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to change your position, but you have to at least hear it out, which, by the way, every intelligence service and military strategist would tell you is the exact same thing that you would do. So, you know, this is not a narrow perspective that only peaceniks would do it. Even people who are involved in the art of war do that same thing because it gives them advantages. So this idea of listening to others. But I like the second point, too, which is that your understanding is always partial. And I'm telling you, that is an exceptional minority of people in the world who are able to maintain that perspective through a conversation, is that I can't fully understand your viewpoint.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, wisdom is not easy, you know. That's why it's such a sort of rare trait. So all these things that we're talking about that wise leaders would do, Gandhi, someone of that ilk, you know, it's not every day that people can achieve these kind of feats. So it's no surprise that it's hard. But this idea about us having just a partial view is critical. You know, often we get very righteous and indignant that, you know, we know how it is, you know, but that's we have to hold on to our perspective with confidence, but also kind of loosely. So should things change, should things develop, that we're happy to update our beliefs and reconsider things. So what often happens is, you know, people dig in their heels and they think they're being strong and determined, but really what they're doing is tying themselves to one perspective, which can quickly become, you know, outdated. So wise people have kind of been shown to be able to get boldly behind something, but, you know, hold on to that perspective loosely so they can change it if necessary.
This is fantastic. I love this conversation. The website is evidencebasedwisdom.com. Charles Cassidy is the director of Evidence-Based Wisdom. Charles, I want to thank you for coming on the show. We're going to have to follow up because I think there's more conversation to be had on this topic. Charles, appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you, really, Ethan. Thanks for having me on the show. And don't forget, I put the article on intentionalinsights.org. I did say I'd mention that too.
Absolutely. Our friend, Dr. Gleb Sapirsky, intentionalinsights.org.
Thanks. It's been brilliant. Thanks for the conversation.
Yeah, really, really appreciate that. All right. Coming up next, I don't know if you saw this, but apparently a fair number of Republicans are suddenly saying, well, maybe we ought not repeal Obamacare, but maybe it just needs to be reformed. We're going to talk about that next. I'm Ethan Behrman in for Ron Owens.